Welcome, readers and romance seekers, to Hopelessly Romantic Behind the Page. So spring has sprung, I guess you could say it, and I think I enjoyed the whole week that it was here, just in time for the weather to turn and transform everything into mud again. It's been cold, it's been rainy, and I just want the sunlight back. Who was it that said that March comes in like a lion and leaves like a lamb? Because I want to talk to them, because so far, that has been the opposite of what we have been experiencing out here in our little neck of the woods. Oh, hello, puppy. But hello, I hope you have all been having a lovely time. It's been a little crazy here around the Casa de la Romantic, trying to juggle a bunch of things, all that. But life goes, I suppose, you know how it is. So as for our book last week, Pretty Little Lion, I'm really wondering what you thought about it. In hindsight, I think I was probably a little harsh, but that's likely due to the context in which I read Pretty Little Lion. I really had to think about this, because if you remember from episode 13, back on Halloween, I gave Beauty and the Werewolf a similarly low score. But the truth was, is I did like the book. I had to get a low score here on the podcast because I read it in the context of a romance novel. And it simply just didn't meet the criteria. It read more like fairy tale fantasy. So over this past week, I really thought to myself, what was different about Beauty and the Werewolf that influenced my personal feelings? I had a similar conclusion with Pretty Little Lion. Basically, I said that I had to give them low scores because of how it was read in context. But so why didn't I enjoy Pretty Little Lion as much as I did Beauty and the Werewolf? I think one big glaring problem is that I am already biased towards the author of Beauty and the Werewolf, Mercedes Lackey. We all know how I feel about her works. I am a huge fan of The Heralds of Valdemar, so I already went in with a certain expectation of what I was going to find inside. Sulika Snyder, however, is completely unknown to me. I've never heard of her before, so perhaps I was a little more critical than I would have been had I already been aware of some of her other work. I know she's got a lot of books behind her. She's done a lot in the Bollywood genre. I'm curious about that. I will probably want to look into those because that's very new for all of us. And the more that I think about it, Pretty Little Lion was not as bad as I originally thought it was. Sure, it's still a little clunky, but I genuinely feel that there's a really good book in there. I love that authors like Snyder are making their way into the romance publishing world. I would have loved to have seen an entire book based around Grace, Finn, and Nathan, who was at Polygroup that I was talking about, because I think we need to see more of that in general mainstream romance. I would have loved to watch them take on the baggage of Grace's double life as a surgeon by day, third shifter by night, as well as grapple with Finn's past with the vampire Tavi. I think that would have been amazing as its own focused story. I'd read the hell out of that. I'm dead serious. There was a whole like second thing boiling underneath with Grace, because she's a surgeon. She works part-time at a local hospital, and they kind of made it seem like, you know, she had to choose between two worlds and whatnot. So I liked that. It's just, unfortunately, it came alongside of everything else. So I'm just like, I can't get emotionally vested in this. You know what I mean? And like I said before, the novel Pretty Little Lion, it was presented to us as a romance. And really, that's the crux of it. That's why I rated it the way I did. As I've figured out in all of these books, romance novels tend to run in long series, but without the need for a new reader to go back to book one to catch up on what's going on. They're their own stories inside of an established universe, and we don't necessarily need all of the backstory to understand the universe. The disaster that was A Bride for the Lost King is testament to that need. You have to be able to balance that line. That way people don't open a book and go, what is this 4 pages in, and then have to go back and find out what happened. Again, that's just for the romance genre. If I had found Pretty Little Lion as an urban fantasy dusted with romance, I would have gone and read the first book if I was interested in the series for the, in the first place. And then I would have been able to orient myself properly so I can enjoy Pretty Little Lion the way it was meant to be enjoyed. So like I said, context matters, and I'm going to get that on a shirt if I ever start doing merch. So on a completely different topic, while I was doing research for Pretty Little Lion, I actually came across something that I'd never heard of. So anyone who does book reviews would know that if reviewers gain enough notoriety, they can start getting on ARC lists, ARC as in Advanced Reader Copy. I've actually come across one or two of these some years ago. It was a friend of a friend situation. They'd managed to get me a couple of these ARCs because they figured that I would enjoy those particular novels. The one I remember the most is Soon I Will Be Invincible by Austin Grossman, which I did enjoy at the time looking back. But one purpose of an advanced reader copy is to gain a review and press for a novel that is yet to be released. Something that can be quoted and shared and put on print, and sometimes you see them on the novel, the novel cover. If you go ahead and look at Goodreads, they've got a ton of reviews for all those Harlequin books, and you will see a ton of the reviews start with something along the lines of, I was given an ARC in exchange for an honest review. They kind of differ. Basically, it's just like, hey, I got a book, and I'm going to tell you about it. So the thing that I'd never heard of before, a group that's been submitting ARCs, is NetGalley. And I came across them that I was looking for a few things up for Pretty Little Lion. From what I can tell, it's a pretty unique situation, and it's also really cool. If you've got enough audience as a reviewer, librarian, blogger, like you, if you have influence, I guess you could say, without saying the word influencer, you can look over their catalog of not yet released books, and you can request either an ebook or an audiobook. They alert the publisher that you've made this request, and the publisher, I guess based on your status, I don't like to use that word, your notoriety, I guess, they can approve or disapprove your request with the understanding that an honest review is going to come out of this exchange. And I think it's pretty neat because from the looks of things, they try to find those lesser known novels like Pretty Little Lion. They want people to find them. And stumbling across this, it really actually kind of got me thinking if I wanted to get into that sort of exchange at some point. I don't know if I might have mentioned this before on the podcast. I can't remember, but I could talk a little bit about it again. Likely, I don't think I'd want to do it for the main things that I read on this podcast. Mostly because I prefer to keep as far away from a quid pro quo as I possibly can. Sure, a publisher might tell me, hey, we want your honest opinion. So here's free books. We want your honest opinion, but the books are free to review. And as much as we'd like to tell ourselves otherwise, an unbiased opinion is pretty difficult to obtain if you've got a free lunch in front of you. So I like to think that I approach reading for this novel like an average reader would. I look at either bookstore websites or go to the bookstore or maybe go straight to like Sourcebooks or Harlequin, and I make my choices based on the spur of the moment influences, whatever those influences happen to be at that moment, and buy them like anyone else would. I don't want that pressure of a publisher, you know, breathing down my neck with the free goodies, you know? Now, if I ended up on some ARC lists for non-romance reads, I would probably gobble those up and give some short and happy reviews based on my actual reading habits. Like, you know, if it's something out of fantasy or adventure or, you know, young adult, because I kind of like those. But for the main podcast, I'm going to remain as unbiased as possible, and I'm going to buy these books with my own money, for the most part. And as far as NetGalley goes, it unfortunately does not hit my two main criteria for the main books on the podcast. I have to be able to purchase a physical copy for myself, and other readers would be available to buy whatever kind of copy that the websites will have for purchase. As NetGalley only submits audiobooks and ebooks, I'm afraid that I'll have to pass as far as the main romance books go. But I love what they're doing, and maybe if I get to a point where I can start requesting from them, I can say, hey, I'd like to read what's new that you've got that's not a romance, and I can talk to you about it here on Behind the Page. And that brings us to the most disappointing part of our podcast today. What has Heather been reading? Because I haven't been doing much reading outside of the work that I'm doing for the podcast right now. I am still on the Lady Emily series. I'm working through the fourth book right now, but you've already heard me go on about those books. What I have been doing is watching a lot of X-Files and playing a lot of Hades. So I've never seen the X-Files. Yes, I know. I was too young to appreciate it in its heyday, and I was also a little bit of a coward. So there's that. I was not a regular viewer. When my technical advisor heard that I'd never watched X-Files, he immediately sat me down and made me watch the first season. I have to say, I'm loving it. It has everything you could ever want. It's got conspiracies, FBI jokes, early 90s cringe, bad child acting. I love it so much. This was probably going to be our next long watch. We finished a couple of other series not too long ago. And really, I have to marvel that I missed such a huge cultural zeitgeist. I know the basics. Like, I know there's Mulder, the Believer, Scully, the Skeptic, and that's mostly it without getting into, like, spoiler territory that everyone knows about. I do remember when the finale for the series aired. That was, like, an actual proper event. As far as I knew, my parents were not regular watchers of X-Files, but they still tuned in for the finale. I hid in my room. But now I can appreciate it for what it was, so I really enjoyed it. Maybe after X-Files, I can convince our technical advisor to watch Xena with me for a similar early 90s cultural zeitgeist. Now, as for the game Hades, I am also late for that party, but I'm only fashionably late for it. This has also been a blast for me. I'm not a great gamer. I'm just going to get that out there. But I'm not finding Hades too difficult to manage. If I were playing something like, let's say, Dark Souls, where I would die constantly, I'd probably quit after a certain amount of time because I just don't want to deal with it. I want to go forward, and the game's not letting me do that. Hades helpfully has what they call a god mode, which is every time you die, you gain a little bit of a percentage of resistance. You don't take as much damage, so you can actually, you know, enjoy the story. And they're like, we get it, here, enjoy this perk, enjoy the story. But I still die a lot. And in the game Hades, you play as Prince Zagreus, son of Hades, as he tries to rebel against his father and fight his way out of the underworld. Repeated and constant deaths are baked into this mechanic and into the narrative. So that means when I bite it, I'm not upset, because that means I get to go back to, you know, your main base. Oh, hello, Hermes. But I get to go back to the main base, and I can get more story. I get to learn more. You can make friends. You can give people presents. I love it. But also, if you really like Greek mythology and you enjoy roguelike games, I would certainly give this one a go. I have had a blast so far. For the record, I have no idea what roguelike even means. I just know that that's how everyone describes the game, so I'd assume it means something to people. And probably my favorite aspect of the game is that Hades, the character, is not a villain. Yes, okay, he is an antagonist, but antagonists are simply characters who directly oppose our protagonist, as Zagreus is our protagonist and the player, you know, the player avatar. Hades is the guy in the way. He is just trying to do his job running the underworld, and here you've got his willful and rebellious teenage son making it difficult. Hello, Hermes. Hermes would like to say he is also in the game. He wants you to know that, so he's making sure I'm telling you that he is in the game too, and he gives you presents. I hate to say it, but the presents that Hermes gives are not always the best ones. I'm very sorry, Hermes. This is the honest truth. Anyway, that was a rant. But as far as the character Hades, I am just thrilled that they didn't make him an allegory for the Christian devil the way so many Western adaptations do. Even Disney did it twice. Because Hades isn't a bad guy. Heck, he's probably the most well-behaved Greek god out of the whole bunch. Yes, he went and kidnapped his wife, but hey, that's what all the cool gods were doing. He didn't cheat on her. If you want to talk about a nice consensual relationship, don't even talk to me about Zeus and Hera. Don't even talk to me about all those lost loves from Apollo. Don't even come at me with anybody else, because Hades loves his wife, does his job, and keeps his promises. So, he's a good guy. Rant over. So, I think that's going to be enough out of me for today. I hope you enjoyed that last little bit of off-the-rails moment. I will see you all next week when we read The Princess Plan by Julia London. Thank you for joining me, readers and romance seekers, and I hope to see you once again for Hopelessly Romantic. If you like the show, please visit us at hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. If you have questions or want to recommend a read, please email us at contact@hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. Also, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It will go a very long way to help the show, and that way I can help bring you more episodes. The show is written and produced by me, Heather Songster. Our technical advisor is Kwangyun Cho. Hopelessly Romantic is an Age with K production. And it doesn't matter what you read, only that it's what you love.